Hello, my friends, to another episode of your favorite spooky history podcast, Strange Origins. So, between the creepier subjects of these different origin stories, I like to throw in the history of some lighter topics. Just like with mermaids, I feel like unicorns fall under this same category. I've always wondered where exactly the fable of unicorns came from. They don't seem to have been created as a scare tactic like hags were, and they also weren't a creature that has been reported to have been frequently seen or heard like Bigfoot. Yet unicorns seem to be featured pretty heavily in the bedtime stories we tell children, and are at this point pretty iconic. Before researching them, I used to believe that unicorns were pretty simple in their nature. They are commonly described as being a horse, purely white, with a magical horn affixed to its head. But it ended up being a bit more complex than that. The first time I remember really focusing on what exactly a unicorn was in elementary school. As is the case with most kids, I was obsessed with a book series called The Magic Treehouse. In these books, two kids are sent by the sorceress Morgan Le Fay, and later Merlin, on magical adventures in a time-traveling treehouse. On one of these missions, they are sent to see the famous unicorn tapestries that are today housed in the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. The tapestry they go to see is considered by some to be the crown jewel of the Met, as it is one of the most beautifully complex works of art from the Middle Ages that has somehow survived the ravages of time. Made of fine wool, silk, and gilded threads, the series of tapestries show a group of people hunting an elusive unicorn. So why would anyone want to commission such a labor of love focusing on such a strange creature as a unicorn? Well, it all goes back to about the late 5th century BC. The first written record of a creature resembling a unicorn was in a Greek book titled Indica, written by a physician and historian of the time named Ctesias. Indica was the first Greek book that focused on the regions of India, Tibet, and the Himalayas. It was meant to serve as an educational guide to the area, despite the fact that Ctesias never actually visited any of the places he wrote about. Instead, he relied on stories he gathered from those traveling the Silk Road. At the time, India was a far-off land that Greeks couldn't really imagine, and it was only through word of mouth that they could see any of the strange creatures that inhabited India. While the book itself didn't survive, it still has managed to exist today through fragments of summaries by other writers. Of his writing on the unicorn, it's paraphrased that he said that, quote, "There are in India certain wild asses, which are as large as horses, and even larger. Their bodies are white, their heads dark red, and their eyes dark blue. They have a horn in the middle of their forehead that is 1 cubit, which is about 1.5 feet in length. The base of this horn is pure white. The upper part is sharp and of a vivid crimson, and the middle portion is black. Those who drink from these horns made into drinking vessels are not subject, they say, either to convulsions or to the falling sickness. Indeed, they are immune even to poisons if, either before or after swallowing such, they drink wine, water, or anything else from these beakers." Today it's believed that this creature was simply just a rhinoceros, who could easily have been misconstrued as being a unicorn, as both are believed to have horns with magical healing powers. Later, around 50 BCE, Julius Caesar recorded that he had witnessed a stag with a single horn that was living in the thick German Hercynian forest. He was quoted as writing that in this very large forest, which stretches from northeastern France to the Carpathian Mountains, he saw a four-legged animal in the shape of a stag, between whose ears a horn rises from the middle of the forehead, higher and straighter than those horns which are known to us. He did go on to state that the top of the horn branched out. He also stated that the shape of both the female and the male were the same in appearance and the size of their horns, so he must have witnessed several of the creatures. This likely could have described a reindeer, though it is strange that the creature was only described as having one horn coming out of the middle of its forehead, while deer and reindeer are known for having two separate antlers. It is important to note that on occasion some deers are born with only one antler, which are dubbed unistags, though it is rare, kind of like when cats are born with an extra paw, they do exist. In the 2nd century CE, another Roman historian by the name of Aelian described in his writing a creature that matched the description of a unicorn, though his definition was a bit different. He stated that their coats were red in color, not pure white, and that their horns were black. He also wrote that they were nice to other animals, but that they preferred to be alone and only mingled during mating season. Much like other descriptions, he stated that after they had grown to maturity, they were pretty much impossible to capture, but that drinking from their horns is a great way to cure all of your ailments. It was common with ancient writers and historians to build upon older works, either adding in their own observations, combining them with other animals they knew were real, or blowing their descriptions out of proportion. A great example of this is the monoceros, which was first described in Pliny the Elder's book, Natural History. Pliny described the creature as having the body of a horse, the head of a stag, without the antlers, the feet of an elephant, and the tail of a wild boar. The monoceros was famous for having a black horn in the middle of its forehead, which was about 1 meter or 3 feet in length, and was impossible to capture. While the description sounds a lot like a unicorn, the reality is that the monoceros was just a combination of different animals, much like the Greeks did with their mythological creatures, except instead of the creature being an amalgamation of powerful animals meant as a storytelling device, it was historians who wanted to add their own flourish to a story, which culminated in a creature that was beyond imagination, frankly. A fascinating flourish added to the story of the monoceros was thrown in by an interesting character by the name of Cosmas the Monk. Unlike many of his counterparts, Cosmas had actually sailed to India around 550 AD. A skilled mapmaker, his Christian topography includes some of the most famous ancient maps of the Old World. While Cosmas wrote that he did not personally see the creature, he had heard claims of a terrible beast who was seen as invincible, and that all of its strength was contained in its single horn. When pursued by hunters, it would throw itself off the end of a cliff and fall down on its unbreakable horn, escaping unscathed. As is the case with a lot of mythical creatures, religion influenced how people viewed the unicorn. It is said that there are certain passages of the Bible that refer to the unicorn, though this claim is tenuous. Instead of using the word unicorn, it used the Hebrew word re'em, which can be translated to be in reference to a lot of different animals, including a rhinoceros or wild ox. Instead, early Christians went along with the unicorn translation and deciphered the passage as allegorical in nature instead of literal. The 7th century scholar and Archbishop Isidore of Seville wrote that the unicorn was impossible to catch unless you used a virgin woman to capture it. When the girl tames the unicorn, she could then lead it anywhere. Medieval writers saw this story as symbolism for how Christ, the unicorn, could only be born of a virgin. The Carthaginian writer Tertullian even asserted that the unicorn horn was a symbol for the cross. Saint Basil, who lived in the 3rd century, asserted that Christ should be referred to as the son of unicorns, as the unicorn was considered, quote, irresistible in might and unsubjected to man. Another reason this comparison may have been made was the fact that unicorns were often thought to be able to purify dirty or poisoned drinking water for other animals with their magic horn, which could be likened unto Christ's redemptive powers. After that, unicorns found a home in the illustrated pages of bestiaries in the 12th and 13th centuries. Instead of National Geographic, medieval educators had bestiaries to help them teach people about the different animals of the world, most of whom they would never be able to see in person because of the distances it took to travel to them. The illustrations were often illuminated and beautifully drawn in a style that would take an incredible amount of time to replicate. This later even led to the unicorn becoming a popular figure in family crests, which were used to signify the power or certain characteristics of a family name. Scotland even made the unicorn their official national animal in the late 1300s. This was primarily because the unicorn was seen as the enemy of the lion, which was the national emblem for England. These different comparisons bled into the medieval art world, and eventually into the world of trading. It's said that rhinoceros horns and narwhal tusks were pawned off as unicorn horns to unsuspecting buyers. A big part of the reason people would shell out big bucks for these unicorn horns was because they believed that they had the ability to detect poison if you stirred them in whatever you were going to be drinking or eating. This was an especially popular purchase with royalty of the time, who were always paranoid about being poisoned, as they probably should have been. Others would grind it up and consume it so that they would be able to gain immunity from toxins. It's even said that Ivan the Terrible, the Russian Tsar, had a staff carved from a unicorn horn. Other royals like Charles the Bold, the Duke of Burgundy, had the hilt of his sword created from a unicorn horn, which most likely was just a walrus tusk. In 1533, Pope Clement VII gifted King Francis I of France with a horn mounted in solid gold, which at the time was a rather expensive and, might I say, original gift. Another royal, Queen Elizabeth I, was gifted a prized sea unicorn horn by the explorer Martin Frobisher in 1577. According to the legend, she loved the thing so much that she kept it with her crown jewels. What proved to Martin, or so he believed, that the horn had magical properties was a quick test of putting spiders inside of it. When the spiders died, he declared that the horn was perfect for detecting and destroying poisons. When Sir Humphrey Gilbert offered Elizabeth another horn, she bought it for an enormous sum of £10,000, which at the time could have purchased her an entire castle. Other parts of the unicorn were equally as valuable, unsurprisingly. In the 12th century, an abbess by the name of Hildegard of Bingen recommended that to protect yourself from leprosy, you should apply an ointment made of unicorn liver and egg yolk. Wearing a belt made of unicorn leather was supposed to protect you from the plague, while donning leather shoes would protect you from diseases that would affect your legs, feet, or loins. As is the case with a lot of different fabled creatures, Different cultures around the world have different versions of the unicorn. In Islamic countries, their version of the unicorn is called Shadhavar, which I'm sure I mispronounced. Popping up in Muslim bestiaries, it was noted by historians that the creature looked a lot like a European unicorn, though their myth is a bit more complex. It's said that the Shadhavar has a single horn but with 42 hollow branches inside of it, which serves as a kind of musical instrument when the wind passes through them. When the horns were gifted to kings, they could even be played by humans like a flute. When one side of the horn was played, it was said that it created a beautiful, happy sound, while the other side made a sound that caused people to cry. In China, their version of the unicorn was the Qilin. It's depicted throughout history as having a single horn coming out of the middle of its forehead, but instead of a horse or goat body, those in Europe were acquainted with, it sported the body of a tiger, an ox's tail, and the head of a dragon, which makes for kind of a strange-looking creature. Sometimes the scales of a fish cover its body, while in other versions, it is covered in flames and can breathe fire. The Qilin was a symbol of good luck and prosperity, and according to the lore of China, Korea, and Japan, the creature would appear when an important birth or death of a ruler was going to happen. It's said that the birth of Confucius, the famous Chinese philosopher and politician, was heralded by the supposed appearance of a Qilin. Unlike Bigfoot, or even on occasion mermaids, no one really claims to have seen a unicorn in modern times. While people attempt to create elaborate hoaxes involving the existence of unicorns, none of them have really stuck. I guess that's why it's so fascinating to me that the image of the unicorn is everywhere. Children's books, classic artwork, and modern films. Today, unicorns are considered a reminder of a bright and colorful childhood, for millennials at least, as they were a popular subject for artists like Lisa Frank and the Harry Potter universe. A great film to watch if you're into comedic dramas is The Unicorn Store. While it sounds like a children's program, it actually is for adults, I promise. It's about a young woman who, after entering adulthood, is forced to confront all of her fears of just how boring it is to not be a kid anymore. When a man comes to her offering her the chance at owning a real-life unicorn, things get interesting. Unicorns have lasted this long because, in my opinion, they've become symbolic for how the things we find magical in childhood can actually translate to adulthood, despite the belief that the two have to be completely separate. I mean, that is kind of how this podcast was created in the first place, because despite all of my adult responsibilities, I still find time to satiate all of the childhood questions about the world I had growing up, and at the same time learning to ask new ones every day. I hope that this short episode on unicorns was as interesting for you as it was for me. Thank you so much for listening to 40 episodes of Strange Origins now, my friends. Please never stop asking questions about the world. And don't forget to keep it strange.